Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys talk all about recessions. What are they? How do we get into them? And how do they affect the housing market? While also telling you how to prepare as a buyer or a seller. All while sipping and reviewing barely legal small batch cask strength bourbon from Dark Arts Whiskey House. A unique blend of three small batch barrels all aged 6 to 8 years, sporting a 51% corn, 39% rye, and 10% malted rye mash bill. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, as well as Fathom Realty and Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and I am here with
Jameson Amoros.
Last but not least, Oscar Ibarra.
And we are, of course, at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro here in Greenwood Village off of I-25. And this topic, I'm interested to talk about it. I think it's going to be a little heated on the comments. But as you guys know, on this podcast, we talk about real estate and we drink and review bourbon for you guys at home. And on today's episode, the topic we're going to be talking about is the potential recession and how it affects the real estate market. And
I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there before you guys start beating me up about it. No. It is about the current administration. I had a couple of heated political conversations on both sides. Had to call a friend up and tell her I still love her. And, you know, politics aside, I don't give a crap about them. Care about you. So please don't take offense, but comment. I mean, if you're offended, comment. Rant, rave, we want to hear
it. Fuck it, take offense. I don't care.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care. I'm more of like, I love you guys. I mean, I'll have my opinions, but they're just that. Opinions.
I love most of you.
Yeah. So on today's episode, what we're going to do is, like I said, we're going to try and break down the recession. What is it? How does it affect the housing market in the past and historically? And then as a seller and as a buyer, how can you navigate the housing market if we do end up in a recession? But before we get into that, of course, we got to lighten the load a little bit. And like I said, we always drink bourbon and review bourbon and whiskey on this podcast. And on today's episode, the bourbon that we're going to be reviewing is Barely Legal Bourbon.
Severus Snape's Dark Arts. Yeah.
It's called it's from Dark Arts Whiskey House, and it's their Barely Legal Bourbon Small Batch Cask Strength. This did win the 2024 gold in the Council of Tasters and American Spirits, but we know how
that sounds. Kind of
the Council of Tasters.
How do I meet those people?
Yes.
And what are their qualifications?
I love the bottle
because honestly, we've been tasting a whole lot. Does that? I mean, are we Council of Tasters?
I would. I mean, the Old Forester lady, Master Taster, said that we basically could qualify at this point.
I mean,
and this is number 84.
I feel like I could drink this while reading a Harry Potter book.
Yeah, shit, dude. I'd happily drink this wearing my wizard costume, watching Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
Kidding me?
I mean,
check out the video, guys, if you want to see the bottle.
This is Aragorn's drink of choice.
So the bottle looks like some old 1700s.
Get it right.
It's cool though.
Alchemist.
Cool. And the reason that the bottle is what it is because they actually did something really different with the mash bill on this bottle. So this bottle has a 51% corn, 49% rye combination. So normally that would be considered a rye, right? Because it has no malt, whatever. What they did that was cool with this one is a portion of that rye is actually dedicated to malted rye. So it's actually 51% corn, 39% rye, and 10% malted rye. As you guys know, normally if bourbon whiskeys have a higher malt, it tends to be a little bit sweeter.
Yep.
You see that around anywhere between 4 and 8%, you get that sweetness. So the fact that this is 10% malted rye, I am so interested. And I mean, you could tell because the color of the liquid in the bottle, it's dark.
You guys were talking about from Alchemy?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
That's
their idea.
Their idea.
They use wood, fire, to turn into liquid gold.
And this is, so the cool thing about this distillery, Dark Arts, in this bottle is it's a blend of three barrels of small batches, okay? And then each one of those blends is aged 6 to 8 years, and it's always bottled cask strength.
Yep.
So,
which means this thing's a good 58%.
Yep.
We're ABV are 113 proof.
Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. It's originally distilled in Indiana, but then it's blended and bottled in Lexington, Kentucky. So it is a American.
It's
bourbon.
Distilled in Indiana?
Yep, distilled in Indiana and blended and bottled in Lexington. All right, I'm going to go ahead and pour it out. But while while you guys kind of talk a little bit about something. We'll see. Fill it up. Fill the space.
No, I think I'm excited about this topic because obviously the recession is the headline. And the reason we wanted to do this is because it's very confusing. We've been talking, for 2 years about a soft landing and cutting rates and quantitative easing and whatever, right? one of the articles I pulled up, this is what it says. So there's the Fed, right? And then the Fed has different headquarters and directories in different major cities. One of them is in New York. One of them is in Atlanta. And the Atlanta Fed came out, I think, 2 weeks ago and said, hey, we think our GDP is going to shrink by 2.8% for Q1, which would say, oh, my God, this is one of the key indicators of a recession. A week later, the New York Fed said, no. We think we're actually going to grow 2.4% in Q1. Boy. And they're looking at the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why this is an important topic, because people just, there's so much uncertainty. And we talk about not being able to predict anything well.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example. Two of the highest bankers in the land have complete opposite viewpoints on what Q1, January through March, is going to look like from a GDP standpoint.
It's going to be interesting.
And I think we need to cover two things, right? Everybody thinks recession and they think the housing market crashes, right? And also what exactly constitutes a recession? Yep. What does that mean?
Yep. Right?
What are the key points? Because there's technically we're in a recession and holy shit, we're in a recession.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Recession, it's a depression.
But I was going to say before you guys get me to that state of mind, let's go ahead and taste this bourbon. All right. So I'm interested to see what you guys say. I mean, honestly, this is one of the higher proofs that have actually hit me in the nose.
The initial sniff, it kind of hit me, but then I dove in with my nose and it's actually pretty smooth.
It is.
It is very ethanol heavy though.
It is.
Feel it back here.
It masks a lot of the normal, flavors on the nose that you would expect with malted rye, like caramel, vanilla,
I'm getting a lot of
it's very spicy.
Well, it's spicy, but it's floral. I'm getting a lot of
hibiscus.
Not a peach, but like a plum, like that kind of
nectarine.
Something like,
And I don't know what it is. My nose is like just straight ethanol.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. You'll get that kick that makes you kind of, This one was, I could feel it back here. It's pretty strong.
I almost can't.
I want to say it's kind of thick.
Can't smell through the
nose is thick.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to get that peach or that. Like, I can get the caramel vanilla sweetness a little bit.
And this is something that we've never had before.
I'm getting like a buttery caramel.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Like kind of buttery, kind of.
But it is fucking heavy. It's heavy. I mean, the legs on it are great. I love how it looks in the glass.
I do love
the
color whiskey.
The color of it.
Yeah, I'm a leg man. That's what I'm saying. The color on this is amazing.
The color is. This is what I want to see when I you pour me out a bourbon. The one I go back to it a lot. The one, the Fly Fisher one.
Yeah,
it, highly weeded. Yeah. It looked like it was watered down bourbon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I can't get anything.
I'm trying.
It's, yeah,
and I.
I can't.
Okay.
I can't do
Jameson is short-circuiting over there.
Okay, I mean, it's not, we're not too far off. Actually, we're actually spot on.
Are we?
On the nose, you can detect the delightful aroma of ripe orchard fruits,
okay. A
gentle infusion of rye spice,
and
a hint of caramelized sugar with a touch of lemon.
Okay.
Like if you're
right citrus, there. Yeah.
It's kind of like when you're concocting a coulis, you know, you put the citrus in, then you put your fruits in, and your sugars, it caramelizes.
I'm going to be so interested to see how this opens, especially if JC's glass. Yeah, if
you
it
know,
opens.
A lot of the bourbons, the bourbons lately that we've been tasting have had that like kind of high pitch.
Swirl it around in your glass and then take
apricot.
Yeah, but it's immediately. Once it settles, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I mean, though. You have to swirl it and open it.
No,
and then it comes. This punches.
This would be a good one for your aerator.
Yeah.
Thing.
No, that apricot that comes in, it's very dominant. So, you know, it's there.
I get that citrus now, though, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
This is just, it's
in
there.
If you swirl, that's so great. If you force it to open, I'm talking like, I'm washing machine spinning this.
I look like Michael J. Fox holding this glass.
Like, then you get it. And yeah, I mean, fuck, dude. If it opens
Charlie,
that,
if you splash me with bourbon.
If it opens to that, profile. Oh, damn. Okay, cool. All right, I'm going to go ahead. Cheers, gentlemen. I'm going to get sips in.
Kanpai.
Hot damn. Wow. Okay. So, I mean, even before I took a breath, where normally after you take a sip, you take a breath, that's where you get the flavor. Right on the tip of my tongue, I got hit with all those spices.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense, too, that this is cash strength because of how light on the tongue it is.
Boy, it's so dry, too.
Yeah.
It dried the hell out of my tongue.
It finishes, almost sucks all the moisture
It's almost like a Sour Patch Kid.
Yeah, I feel it around my entire tongue. Like there's a constriction.
You've been to Jing, right? Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. their Buddha button?
That numbs your mouth and yes. then you take the shot?
Yes.
Exactly.
They have a Buddha button martini and it's a special flower that you chew on. And when you chew on it,
I knew the name of that flower.
It basically numbs your tongue.
Yes.
Huh. But it's called a Buddha button.
Dude, this is wild.
And it finishes with spice, but like chili spice.
Wow.
Like red pepper flakes almost?
Yeah.
It's
jalapeno-ish.
Okay. That's wild.
So the second sip I just took, on the back end, I get the caramel
yes.
and the candied sugar.
Yes, but it's...
Like a brown sugar?
I have to breathe out to get the candied stuff, but I see
it. It is sucking everything off the tongue.
Yeah. But then also there's like... I don't know if you guys are getting this, but it's almost like as in my mouth, as the ethanol is like... parting off, I'm getting more flavor.
Yeah.
Like it's opening 1, 2, 3, and then I get that sweetness and then the tightness and the dryness on my tongue.
It's kind of like skydiving. You jump out, madness, and then you pull the chute and then you start appreciating it.
Yeah, no, that...
It comes in it hits hard. Yeah. It's very alcohol heavy, but it's in a good way. It overpowers, and then as you breathe and talk, you start getting the notes of flavors.
Yeah.
And it lingers, and not in a kind of bitter way, flavor way.
Wow. Okay. So what it says, when you take a sip, you'll discover the smooth and indulgent taste of honey chocolate, a satisfying blend of cherry cola and citrus, enhanced by a sprinkle of cinnamon spice. And if reading that, we've talked about this before.
Lick your lips.
Yep.
Flavor.
I was going to say, the cherry cola.
Yeah.
That whenever you're drinking like a cherry Coke, that aftertaste of cherry Coke, that's exactly where the flavor profile is for me.
So I think they need to rewrite that and say your first sip, you're going to get flavor notes of 91 octane and diesel fuel.
I think this is the most accurate tasting note description.
It's alcohol strong.
Yeah.
Like, but it's cherry cola though, I get now.
And yeah, you know, I like alcohol strong.
Yeah.
And it's very up there, but in a good way.
Yeah, but it's flavorful.
It is very flavorful.
And the ethanol adds to that spice on the tip of the tongue.
Do you guys remember the candies, which now that I think about it, I feel like we shouldn't have eaten these, but they were the colas in the wax.
Yes. In the wax.
And you bite them.
That's this flavor.
That's what I mean. It's that.
It's
that
not
subtle,
like a. It's not a
like
cherry
a
cola, but it's like the syrup. But
yeah,
not plastic. But I don't know how to explain it. But those candies.
Yes,
I'm talking about.
Yes.
And now though, like all the microplastics, and I probably eat 10 pounds of those. It's
so
not good.
Was it just me or
James is just shitting out candles?
Yep.
Did you guys chew on the wax?
Oh yeah,
I chewed the hell out of that.
Dude, I chew on everything. I chew on plastic forks.
I would chew that up, and then I'd get one of those candy cigarettes, and just
everybody used to make fun of JC because we would destroy pens.
Oh yeah,
because we would just have to chew on something mm-hmm. like if we're working or whatnot. Like something was always in our mouth.
Yeah, I chew the hell out of my pencils.
I know what you're gonna say.
Say it.
Sorry.
All right. So anyway.
All right. So I'm excited to see how this opens. I think this is going to be one of the best opening bourbons that we've had in a long time.
Agreed.
All right. So let's go ahead. Had a couple sips. I took a little bit more sips than normal for the conversation.
Yeah, me too.
But
I say we. Can I suggest a starting point?
Go for it.
That we just talk real quick when we're talking about recession, mm-hmm. the four key factors that we look at mm-hmm. to determine if there may be a recession.
That's what. Well, I was going to say, overall, what is a recession?
Recession is a significant, widespread, and prolonged downturn in economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
A rule of thumb is that two consecutive quarters of negative gross domestic product growth indicate a recession. However, more complex formula is used to determine the recession, right? So we're going to talk about what James is segueing into is what are the indicators.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that we're doing this is because a report came out last week that from Atlanta that said we're going to be down negative first quarter 2.8%.
In GDP.
In GDP, yes. And the whole thing is if we have one quarter that is down, this is where you start to see all these scares coming, like what's going to happen, because that means one more quarter.
And we're a recession.
And we're quote unquote a recession. And here's the honest truth, guys. The government will not come out and they will wait until the last second to say there is a recession because of the consumer reaction to that news. If somebody's going to tell you, hey, money's not going to go as far, are you going to go out and spend money? No. So it's kind of this double-edged sword where if they say, hey, we're in a recession, people are going to pull back, which could then throw us further into that recession. So we're not going to hear an official statement for a long time.
So it's, okay, we said we weren't going to do a lot of politics. This is full-blown politics. Yes, we're talking about the Trump administration here and what's going on. And in politics, when you're competing on against another politician for a seat in office, a lot of their tactics are, you know, inflating their numbers. Mm-hmm. So your candidate is losing and you're less likely to go vote because, you know, they're losing by a landslide. What's my vote? That's mm-hmm. kind of why governments don't try to, well, they do and they don't spread wide panic when this happens, because if it's going to happen and it's like borderline going to get better or worse, if you catch wind of it, you're going to panic and then you're just going to pull back and it's going to force a recession.
Yep. All right. So for the sake of time in this episode, Jameson, go ahead, break down the four indicators of a recession. Yeah. Basically, these are what the places like Atlanta and New York, these money firms basically look at to decide if there's going to be a recession.
Yeah, they're basically indicators, right? Mm-hmm. So the first one is job market softening. Normally, we look at that with the unemployment rate. If the unemployment rate starts going up, or if we start creating less jobs month over month over an extended period of time. That's number one, right? The second one, which we're seeing and we have seen this week specifically, is the stock market starts pulling back. The stock market starts pulling back because now you're starting to see the effects of tariffs and how businesses are going to combat higher wage growth and, you know, continue to build that into higher prices on goods so that they can pay the higher wages, because they have to bring, there's a whole other episode we could do on that. But stock market pullback mm-hmm. is number two. The third one is what you just said and Oscar just said. Americans are spending less. We look at that by looking at things like the retail national report, right? So retail is normally seen as Americans spending money. And if they're spending less money in retail stores, that means they're holding on to their money. And then the fourth one, and this one we've talked about for a long time, is an increase in delinquency rates mm-hmm. for credit card payments and car payments. So once you start seeing those four key indicators pile up, then you're not saying, hey, a recession is going to happen. They do it by percentage. And they're saying, you know what? There's probably a 40 to 50% chance that we will see a recession within the coming quarters if something doesn't change.
So to summarize, according to an economist at the National Bureau of Economic Research, they measure recessions by looking at non-farm payrolls, industrial production, and retail sales. So payroll,
yep.
non-farm, how much you're spending, retail, and industrial production. So my question is, industrial production with the tariffs, mm-hmm. right? Are those going to go up or down here in the States?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the point of those tariffs is to, you know, increase, you know, money, increase money's coming in from foreign, companies, but at the same time, they're trying to boost up local production of goods, right? So again, the formula, it's going to hurt us here, but it has to be a balance. But if that doesn't work and the production isn't there, recessions.
And just from a social standpoint, guys, if you guys didn't feel this last year and just feel just the news fatigue, you're going to see a lot more of it now, because again, news stations are for profit. They want your attention. They want you to watch them. They want you to read their articles. So when you have a presidency and an election that was this contentious, and then stuff like this happens, you're going to see articles coming out from both sides and you're going to get overwhelmed. So just take it with a grain of salt. Reach out to us. Subscribe, like, follow the page for episodes like this. If you have any questions, please let us know. Because, again, we love doing this research and having this information so we can answer questions for the consumer, for whoever needs it, honestly. And I think with those indicators, I mean, we're seeing them. They're there.
Mm-hmm. But, again, so the same economist, to piggyback on what Jameson Jameson said earlier, we were talking about the New York and the Atlanta financial institutions that had to set they both had the same data but had two different takes on it. The National Bureau of Economic Research also says that there is no fixed rule about what measure what measures contribute information to the process of how they are weighed in our decisions.
Yep.
So it's a lot to kind of just bundle in, but the three factors that you just talked about are the bigger ones.
And wait, number four. I wanted to, what was number four again?
The delinquency on car payments.
That one's a new one for me.
So
well, and the reason it's being brought to light and watches that we've said this before, you're talking almost $2 trillion in credit card debt.
And that's what that's where I was going is we are now at a point in American history where we have the highest amount of credit card debt ever.
Yes.
Ever.
And that's why it's a newer indicator because now people are going, wow, if you're at a 21% and again, car payment interest rates have been high, right? When it used to be a $200 a month car payment, I think now the average car payment is almost $700 a month for the most part. That's a large chunk.
Yeah.
That is a large chunk of somebody's paycheck, right?
Now, so, my question when I always ask about politics and how they affect you, just that, how does it affect you personally? Is your financial situation, does that correlate with you? Do you have high credit card debt? Because for me, absolutely. I've ran a lot of stuff on credit cards lately.
I did. Don't anymore.
Hey-o. Check out the most recent Jameson post had on a slip our and fall. Page.
He had a slip and fall at King Supers and he's suing him, you know, the cast.
All I'm saying is, as long as you're not planning on buying a house the next 4 years, don't be afraid of bankruptcy.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, it sucks, right? Because as consumers, we only get the information that's coming to us via news articles and stuff like that. And like I said earlier, with it being as split as it is right now, right, left, blue, red, whatever it is, please guys take the opportunity to get out of your normal sphere, your normal news areas, because you are being fed information that is tailored to your ideologies and what you think. So regardless of how you feel, please just go visit other websites and just find third party people, third party reports that you can read into, because this is going to get scary from either side you're on. It's going to get intense. And so now what is a recession? A recession is when a country's GDP is negative for two consecutive quarters. That's what they consider as a recession overall, just blanket, right? So we've been hearing about this for the last 2 years, obviously, with what's been going on. But like Oscar said, based on what's been happening with the market in the last month and a half, this is a time where there's almost the most uncertainty that we've had in half a decade, right? Since the pandemic, basically.
So what does that mean in real estate?
Exactly. So what would a recession do to the housing market, and what does that usually look like? Oscar touched on it earlier. When we hear recession, the first thing that people think of is, oh my God, the housing market's gonna tank. I'm gonna lose all this money that I have in my home, my value, all that kind of stuff. But guys, the first thing that I wanna say, just flat out, homeowners, we're sitting on the largest amount of equity in US history, which is, last time I looked, over, $300 billion? So just take that with a grain of salt, and I'm going to kind of kick it over to Oscar on the real estate market, just because you've been through...
Yep.
How many?
Two.
Yeah, so break it down. What did that look like for you? What does it normally look like on a umbrella basis for the housing market?
So the last one in 2008 was a little bit of a... It was a recession, but there was more involved. If anybody saw The Big Short... There was a financial sector that was giving out loans to the general public, that some of them were just for your, well, not even your savvy investor, but, you know, you had investments that you can, you know, shift your money around. Someone that's a little more financially savvy. Not to say that the everyday consumer is not, but there were subprime loans. Now they're QM. There's still some out there. There were option arms. And a subprime loan is a loan that you get because your financial situation or your work situation is at its best, or credit. So you have not so good credit, your work history is okay, and you still want to buy a house. Well, there were loans that would overlook that with a higher interest rate, but then they would offer you an interest-only payment. So you would not pay down your principal. You would only be paying enough to pay the interest on your loan. After 2 years, they were considered 228s. 228s. Well, it was the first 2 years, your interest rate, say it was a 7%, would stay at 7% for 2 years. After the second year, it would skyrocket up, sometimes 2, 3, 4%. So you'd go from a 7% to, let's say, an a 9% full term. So now you have your principal and your interest. Round numbers, say that you were paying $1,000 a month, 2 years, and by the third year, it would go up to $1,600. Mm-hmm. That's $600. That would really hit you in the pocket. The point of those loans were to fix your situation in those 2 years, mm-hmm. refinance out of it, but a lot of people didn't.
Yep.
The option arm was your negative amortization. That means you sent in a payment that was actually adding onto your principal, interest only, that you would only pay interest, your 30-day fixed or 30-year fix, and your 15-year fix. So you could pay down faster, your regular loan, interest only, and then add on to your principal. That was for the investment side. You know, you would allocate your funds that month to something else. A lot of people took advantage of the negative amortization. So that would build up their principal. Recession hit. Now you're underwater. And then when the recession hit back then, the job sector fell as well. So people were losing their jobs and they started losing their houses mm-hmm. because of the financial factor of things,
we
right?
We saw a lot of foreclosures. And because of what Oscar just said, where people were paying off their
short
interest,
sales and foreclosures were abundant.
Yep. And what Oscar means when paying off your interest, when you're paying your mortgage, you pay your mortgage, your monthly mortgage, which is a set rate of, let's say, $2,800 a month. But then you pay the interest of your loan. So that when you're talking about applying for a loan, 7% interest rate, every month that interest gets tacked on. So that's why most financial advisors will tell you when you make a payment on your mortgage, account for the regular payment plus the interest. You want to cover both in that payment in order to really bring that loan down. And what happened was when people were just doing this interest only payment, that means they were not gaining equity. They were not paying their principal down. They were only covering, literally only paying
the bank.
The bank.
You're that's renting it. From the bank.
Yeah.
So it would mm-hmm. not pay down your mortgage. Your principal was not being reduced. And when you're paying your mortgage, a good acronym is PITI. Mm-hmm. Your principal, your interest, taxes, and insurance. So when you're only paying your insurance, yes, you may grow, and then in a recession, you don't, right? Because prices come down, and we'll get into those factors. But say year over end, you're growing to, if you're just paying interest only, but every year your house is increasing, you know, 5%, and you're building equity from an initial purchase, but if you're not paying your principal, you're just stagnant. When you're paying your principal, you're actually reducing your principal balance and you're gaining equity. So it's a bigger equity gain. With interest only, it's just if your house, you know, goes up in value. So with that said, in a market that is volatile and we don't know what's going on, if you're a seller, you want to wait because we'll get out of it and then there's no loss, right?
All right, I'm going to pull you back, Oscar.
Okay.
I'm going to pull you back. So we basically talked about what happened in the past with the recession and kind of what led to the housing crash. The reason that we're not, this recession is probably not going to lead to a housing crash is one, we already said it, there's a lot of equity. People mm-hmm. have a lot of equity in their homes, so they can flip that, use it how they need. And then second, we're in a position where now it's, consumer spending is still elevated mm-hmm. compared to where it was back in 2008. People are still buying, right? And what ends up happening to the market in a recession, it all comes down to consumer
sentiment.
Yeah. How do we feel spending money? How do we feel our money is going to work? And we've talked about this for years now at this point, but we've always talked about the inverse relation of interest rates buying a house versus how good the economy is doing. So what basically in a nutshell, an umbrella, what happens during a recession to the housing market, like we've always said, when these treasury bonds are not being invested in, when people are not spending this money, these loan companies are going to bring the interest rates down to incentivize you to then buy a home. So we've been saying to you guys for the last 2 years, hey, sit on it. If you can't buy now, that's fine, but come up with a plan, right? So if you've been doing that for the last 2 years and we're entering into this recession, we could see a good opportunity for the market, for home buyers. With the market overall, what ends up happening with home sales is homes tend to sit on the market longer because there's less buyers in the pool, right? And we've always said, we talked about this, the more buyers that come into the pool, more expensive houses are going to get. Less buyers in the pool, you're going to sit on market and you're going to have to come up with some creative ways with your agents to keep that market value of your home where it is.
So there is a factor that's not a factor now that caused the crash. I don't think there's going to be a crash. Will there be a reduction in price, home prices? There probably will.
I think naturally,
will.
Yeah.
But there won't be a crash because there is no high-risk loans like they were back in 08. There's no high-risk loans, and people lost their jobs in 08. Now, if you don't lose your job and you have a 30-year fix, there's probably little to no risk for you. You might lose equity, but are you using your equity right now? Probably not. Let's get out of it. You'll be fine. But with the talk of tariffs and all that other stuff, the job side of things may be a little shaky.
We have seen the unemployment rate go up.
Unemployment rate goes up. Cost of the GDP, you know, we're going to start spending more money on goods that we were, you know, that were more affordable. That might factor in a little bit, but not enough, I don't think, to cause a crash. Now, it will dip home prices. But again, the formula that you were saying is that it'll be longer on the market because there's less buyers. Well, if that happens, there's also going to be less sellers because you don't want to sell your house right now price-wise and because you don't know what the outcome of buying another house is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of, I don't want to say it balances, but it's not going to balance for the good. It's going to balance and drop equally. Well,
and that's what I mean. I like that you used the word balance because that's exactly what it's going to be, right? Jameson, you're sitting over here. I feel like you haven't talked, and I know you're stewing, dude.
I'm not stewing. I'm just in my head. It's always interesting to me because there are so many extenuating factors, and this is why things like the housing market are just so hard to predict, right? Because the rule of thumb in a recession is if the stock market starts doing poorly, right, people flood to treasury bonds. And when people flood to treasury bonds, as we talked about a couple episodes ago, interest rates drop, right? So when interest rates drop, that now incentivizes buyers to come into the market because now the mortgages are a little bit cheaper, okay? But if you juxtaposition that to the recession side of job loss, or which would kind of contribute to like overall market sentiment, yes, I'm going to have lower rates, but I may have buyers still sit on the sideline because they're not confident that they're going to have a job to pay that mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, then the next lever that would move to me would be inventory, in that sellers that do have equity are going to be more willing to put their house on the market because now they can use that equity to buy another home, move up, move out, whatever it is, and not have to make that massive jump in interest rates, right? But if the buyers are still on the sideline, that's going to contribute to more inventory. And if there's more inventory, you should see a downward pressure on home prices. But if you take this fourth factor, which is the tariffs, and you start saying, okay, well, I'm going to have new build communities. Now it's going to cost anywhere from $7,000 to $15,000 more per house to build. And there's already a surplus of inventory because people feel comfortable listing their homes at lower interest rates. Are the builders going to build as many houses if they can't sell them?
Hear me out. This is just me being cynical. Will it balance itself out though? Because materials are going to be more expensive.
Yes, but what?
And with the immigration thing, labor.
It's going to get more expensive.
Correct. So at what point, what's going to happen? Builders are going to stop building.
That's my point. And when that happens, now your inventory goes back down to what it was. So and this is where I was going to, which thank you for pointing that out. I don't think we're going to see a massive change, is what I'm saying. I think you're going to see a little bit of downward pressure on home prices. I think you're going to see a ton of refinances in the next year.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And people doing like home renovation projects and whatnot. You're going to see more listings for resale. But if the tariffs stay in place, I think you're going to see less from new home builds. So to Oscar's point, I think that balances out. So realistically, to me, the biggest lever is what does the consumer feel? And do they feel confident enough in this mini recession or whatever you want to call it to now finance money and buy houses? Because if that's the case and we have the builders inventory shrinking, then now you might actually see a little bit of upward pressure on prices if enough buyers come to the market. If the interest rates drop enough and they have enough confidence.
And that's what I'm saying. It's going to be interesting.
Keyword balance, but it balances and then it'll either go down or up, but I think it'll all be on the same wavelength, if you will. So on your point, you brought up a good point. I said that sellers should wait it out, but what happens on both sides, on the buy side and on the seller side, right? The sellers that do have the equity, as long as we went up, I'm going to guess with the up and down that we've been going through our equity, 20%. As long as it doesn't drop 20%,
you're 30.
But I'm being safe, right? Because it's gone up and then we dropped like 5-10%, then it gone up again. So it's still on an upward trend, even though it dropped a little bit. If it doesn't drop, if your equity doesn't drop more than 20% during this period of time, you're still golden. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when the consumers stop spending?
Yep.
The feds start incentivizing. They start doing this and that to free. They cause an uproar in the way of interest rates.
Okay.
So the feds now will drop the interest rates again to stimulate it.
Yep.
And then now the buyers are excited as long as they have work. And the sellers are excited because now they have that equity, even though we dropped, as long as it didn't drop 20, hey, I'm going to take that equity and buy at a 4% now. So again, it's a balance, but it's going to be interesting on inventory is the key.
So we're kind of walking around it right now. So let's go ahead and move on to the next portion we talked about. What is a recession? What are indicators for a recession? How does it affect the housing market? So now let's talk about how will this affect sellers and how they can prepare? How will this affect buyers and how do they prepare? So let's go ahead and start with people who are selling their homes, okay? So if we do go into this recession and we do see consumer sentiment slowing down, we do see homes sitting on the market longer, what are some things that are going to be important for sellers to consider and think about when listing their home?
I think the biggest thing is you have to reset expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand what you're trying to get out of the home. From your bottom line, you have to understand where the market's at and looking at comparable homes, right? And figuring out what's selling. And you have to realize that as things stay expensive, buyers get picky. So the house in your eyes could be, hey, this is my home. I love it. It's beautiful. It worked for me and my family. But if it's taking 19 buyers to come and look at that house before you even get an offer, nothing wrong with the house, but people are going to be very, very specific on what they're going to spend their money on. So the focus for sellers in my mind would be reset expectations on pricing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Understand it from the buyer's perspective, what they're going to need to make it work, whether that's concessions, rate buy down, you know, drop in price, whatever that looks like. And then make your home as appealing as possible for the largest group of buyers that you can.
And that's where I was going.
Well, I want to add one more factor to, yes, resetting expectations. That's key.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the a big ones is also days on market.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it comes to a new shift in the market, let's say a recession, it's hard to predict what prices are going to do.
Sure.
And us pricing is going to dictate that, right? We kind of start creating what the next market looks like. So if a seller comes in, we take the data that we already have, which is data before the recession. It's not going to be moving forward. So you're going to have to test the market out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have a crystal ball. So understand that your days on market are going to be prolonged or shortened depending on where you list.
And I love that you said that.
We test the waters.
We don't have a crystal ball, right? But what I want to say to sellers is now, if we do go into this recession, it is going to be the most important for you to position your house in the best light possible. And that goes through everything we've already talked about, staging, virtual staging, redoing things, simple things like your carpet, getting your floors done. It's gonna be so important for you to make your home marketable, because when there is a lower number of buyers that are coming into the pool, like Jameson said, those buyers are gonna be more picky. So where you used to have 15 buyers coming through, and they were going, you know what? I could deal with the paint here. I can deal with the little stain on the carpet over here. You're now going to have 5 buyers, and 2 of those buyers are going to go, no, I want to move in and I want this to be ready. I don't want to think about anything. And I think this is such an important element. And sorry, Jameson, I'm going to drop part of your experience here with this off market. This is why it's going to be so important for you to vet realtors, vet your selling agent, because there are some agents that are going to make you pay for photography. There's some agents that are going to make you pay for videography or staging, whatever it may be. You have the right to vet your agents, and all 3 agents sitting right here, we all take care of those things for our clients, right?
Let me add on to that. All 3 of us have a good tool belt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A good agent's going to need a good tool belt walking into this new market. One, have a good company that could do your pictures, and staging, Beat the Gene Productions.
Ew.
Ew.
There's one.
Thank you.
I have that condo.
Mm-hmm.
I priced it aggressively well. I have a contractor that went in and put new carpet. I need to make it look nice.
Mm-hmm.
Waits till closing to get paid, nothing out of pocket. And then you go in and try to figure everything else out. I have a lender that I talked to, had to sit down and had to negotiate how many deals or what we could do. This lender went ahead and said, look, I'll do this one damn near for free to get that interest rate as low as possible to get the buyer in. Now, if I get a buyer, then I'll incentivize by maybe doing both sides and reducing my commission.
Hold on. I'm going to cut you off, but for good purpose. When Oscar says a good interest rate, guys, he's sitting at 5.5%. Okay? 5.5. Mm-hmm. That is insane
so
in the current market.
If I get the buyer, I will reduce my commissions to make sure that lender now gets at least paid some money. Mm-hmm. And it's a win for the seller because he sold, and it's a win for the buyer. And at the end of the day, if your agent's not looking for the best for the consumer, might want to ask what their business model is.
Let's use this current listing. Guys, consumers, people who are listening, agents that are listening, your clients, if you were to go to a townhome or a condo complex and you walk in and you have the same exact two bed, two bath, 850 square feet, two bed, two bath, 850 square feet, same everything, but one has a 6.7% interest rate, mm-hmm, and the other one has a 5.5% interest rate, which one are you going to pick?
Well, not only that, take it a step further.
And
let's say they both have the same interest rate. One has brand new carpet, the other, mm-hmm, one doesn't. Yeah, is it maybe in that size of an apartment, I don't know, $2,500 to replace the carpet? That's fine. Mm-hmm. As a seller, maybe that doesn't sound like a lot. Like, why would they care about $2,500? But as a buyer, mm-hmm, that is just one more thing
you don't have
on
to
top
about
of all the other things. That
time
they
and
don't
money
have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now you got to take time to get it replaced.
Right. Yep.
Wait to move in. Now you have all your closing costs you just paid. Your down payment you just paid. Mm-hmm. Another $2,500 is the straw that broke the camel's, yep, back.
So exactly, as a seller, thinking about your marketing, think about positioning your listing in the best light possible, and having an agent that can navigate the market, help you with marketing, and explain to you why they're making these changes to your days on market and different costs and all that kind of stuff is beneficial.
So when we coin creative, you know, get creative with it, people's, okay, whoa, is that illegal or what? No, creative means how can we formulate the same steps to get you to the closing table with this new market.
Correct.
For the benefit of
exactly
the consumer.
Exactly.
I talked to an agent. I had a sit down with an agent. Hey, let's talk about this scenario. I talked to the contractor. Hey, help me out with this scenario. You went out there, took some great pictures. I mean, it's getting creative to sell the home, mm-hmm, but also benefiting the, mm-hmm, buyer at the same time to bring in the consumer,
yeah,
to sell the home.
Well, and I'm going to kind of take it on the inverse of this too. So yes, you can still list your home during a recession, make sure it's pristine and everything, but I just kind of want to touch on some considerations for sellers, right? Because this is not something that a lot of people would think about. And if you don't have an agent that's thinking about you past the home sale, then this is something that may not come up. But as a seller, something to consider, right? If you are going to sell now, most of you, a lot of you have been rate locked. The reason you haven't sold is because you're at a 2.8% or a 3%. And one thing that sellers have to consider is that interest rate. If you do sell now, it's going to be, you're going to lose that interest rate and then move into a potential 6.77, whatever the market is right now. So consider that. Think about, hey, you know, I'm losing this interest rate to get into this one. Obviously, if it works for you, think about your monthlies. If it works, that's all that matters. Do it, because that's what it comes down to. But the other thing to consider as well, on top of that, purchasing and getting out of your interest rate is, like we said, people aren't going to be selling, so there's going to be less homes on market. You're going to compete. So as a seller, don't forget, when you sell your home, you also become a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So consider the fact that you are going to be entering the buying pool where there's going to be less homes on market. So you are going to have to compete, and you may end up having to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you said key factor is you're going to be a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So say that your equity did drop. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the key point there as well is interest rate. So wait till the interest rate drops to your comfort zone. You're still going to have equity. Your equity drops a little bit, but you're going to become a buyer. So guess what? You're going to buy. So the equity kind of transfers.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of balances out. Your equity drop, but you're also going to buy lower.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sell lower, you're going to buy lower. And then guess what? It'll go back up.
Yep.
The interest rate is a factor. If the interest, yep, rate works, do it. Wait till it drops. The equity drops, yes. You're not really losing money because you're going to buy cheaper, mm-hmm, and then that property will go up in value again. And, mm-hmm, so you'll gain that equity back.
Yep.
You got to look at it from a long-term or a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're selling, you're going to become a buyer. It kind of just washes out. As long as the interest rate makes sense, I think you sell for whatever reason. If you have to sell, then none of this matters.
It could also be a beautiful time to capitalize on migration. If you have a beautiful place that you want to live in Kansas or Wyoming, whatever, a place that the market is lower and you can get acreage, take that equity that you grew, mm-hmm, in Colorado,
sure,
and get your dream house, get some land, you know, take advantage of it. But again,
your dream home in Kansas, said no one from Colorado. Sorry. Salida, sorry, baby. Kansas.
Salida.
But no,
Wichita's popping.
The reason I say that is because, you know, I'm a huge fan of one man's trash is another man's treasure, right? And yes, where the market may dip, it may hurt sellers. See how it works for you, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what Jameson thinks. If you look at the numbers, you go, huh, mm-hmm. I could afford that monthly, and huh, I really do like this house and the acreage, and I could live the life I want. Do it, because that's all that matters is what you want from it.
So that being said, now switch it from mm-hmm. a buyer standpoint. What does that look like during a recession?
All good.
I was going to say, recessions work for buyers. Hold on, that are prepared.
Well, that have steady jobs.
Well, and that
as long as jobs are good, there is no mm-hmm. reason why you should not buy in a recession. You're buying low with low interest rates.
Well, and that's what Warren Buffett says it all the time. The best time to invest is when the market's bad, and that's something. That's one of those like back end conspiracy theories that everybody's talking about. Like, oh, they're manipulating the market so everybody can billionaire friends can get richer.
I'm not in a position to invest in the stock market right now. Mm-hmm. I'm getting out of, you know, this hole that I'm in, and you know I'm working my way. I'm almost there. And my wife, we were watching the news. We really don't watch the news in the morning, but we had it on for some reason. And the stock market was plummeting. Mm-hmm. And as he was talking about it, it kept going down. And he's like, well, I can't keep up with it, but it's going down.
Put the ticker on the bottom of the screen.
And we were watching.
This is like one of those Wile E. Coyotes where he goes off the cliff and like hangs for a second and then falls, but his eyeballs are still up there.
Yeah. It was one of those scenarios. My wife's like, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm like, man, maybe this is the time we want to get in on this and buy super low and then just wait it out.
But that's, and to Oscar's point, that's why recession means buyer's market, right? Recession means that as a buyer, you have maybe not more opportunities as far as listings, houses on the market, but sellers are incentivized to sell. Yes. They need to do things to sell their home. So the buyer benefits, because that means we can get you better concessions. We can maybe work in refinishing the floor, getting carpets done mm-hmm. from the seller. Because again, once those houses hit 30 days on market, 40 days on market, sellers are going, oh shit. Oh God, I need to get out from under this. I need to move. My job's coming. I'm having this kid. I need to, you're putting that pressure is there on them. So I think that a recession would be great for buyers. And the reason that I mentioned this earlier, and we've been telling you guys for the last 2 years, if you can't buy now, that's okay, but prepare. This is what you're preparing for. And if the person who listened to us 2 years ago has 25K, 35K down, you are going to benefit hugely in quote unquote this potential recession.
Did you say hugely?
Hugely.
I think you said
hugely. Yeah, I think from a buyer standpoint, there's a unique phenomenon that I think we're going to see. And there's other economists that have said this as well, where you're going to, in a recession, interest rates are going to come down, which is going to make it money cheaper, right? Which is good for buyers. That interest rates coming down is going to incentivize sellers to put their homes on the market, which is going to increase in inventory, which should have downward pressure on prices. But the overall mindset of consumers is negative, meaning that most buyers aren't going to take advantage
of it.
That's
what I mean. Yeah.
So the unique position is normally when we see home prices lower and we see interest rates go down, we see an uptick in home prices because now all of a sudden these buyers are like, oh man, this is our chance. But with so much uncertainty, to Oscar's point, if you have a plan and you're in a place financially where you can make that jump in home ownership, I think buyers are going to have a very unique opportunity to have a lot of inventory to take a look at and still get concessions, lower home prices, but not a ton of competition.
Don't forget the craziest fact that we've unearthed over the last year and a half. 31% of home buying age millennials are renting, making over $120,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The millennials are the largest generation after the boomers. That means that you have people who are sitting there that have probably been stacking the cash because they're renting.
1.6 million millennials did not participate in household formation last year.
I talked to one yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
1.6 million.
Exactly what you're saying. It's his real life stuff. I talked to one yesterday.
And that's what now that's where I say this is almost like a, hey guys, this is a, I won't lie to you. Oscar put that listing on the market yesterday and I was like, I need to call up a good lender. Right?
It's
like,
not bad, right?
I haven't thought about it. But now I saw that and I went, wait, hold on. I can get in at 5.5. You're telling me after everything I could get out at a $2,400 a month payment and I have property, I have an asset.
That you could rent out when rents go up.
And that's what I mean is—
Well, dude, real life story for my—
But hold on. That's what I'm saying is, guys, you've heard me talk about multiple times, like I'm not ready to buy a house. I am the person we're talking about. I am the buyer we're talking about. I've been saving. I've been prioritizing. And Oscar posted that one listing, and where 2 days ago I had no thoughts about purchasing a home, yesterday I went, I should probably talk to a lender and really start figuring out my finances.
That makes me feel good because it's working.
Yeah, it is. 100%.
Well, and it's not out of the realm of possibility, right?
No.
So I had a closing on Monday, and it's a couple, millennial couple. They got a couple kids. They're in their early 30s. Never purchased before. Came from nothing in bumfuck Southeast USA. Came out here. They started talking about, hey, how do we buy a house? We put them on a plan. Within a month and a half, we got their financials because they were good with debt, like paying off debt. We just need enough money for earnest money, essentially. We were able to get them into a house at $460,000, 5-bed, 2-bath.
Dang, that's
right?
A good deal.
they use a CHAFA down payment assistance, so they only need to come out of pocket $1,000. We negotiated sewer repairs, electrical repairs, water repairs, and HVAC to a total of, I think it was about $10,000 extra dollars. On top of the $10,000 in concessions that we got, so $20,000. And on top of that, and these guys, and I'm going to put this out there, right? I'm not going to say names, but it's not like they make $250,000 a year, right? They have hourly jobs. One of the hourly jobs is around $22 an hour. So it's not like, you know, it's not like this, oh, yeah, I'm sure they have money.
They're a tech bro. They're making it, yeah.
They don't, right? One of them works for a pest control company. Other one works as a manager at a bowling alley, right? So just real life shit. They get to the closing table. They got a check back for $2,600.
I'm sorry.
So what does that equate to? Because
so
I have another one.
What it equates to essentially
real
is
stuff.
They spent a grand total to get into this home of $1,400.
I just love it.
Not a tit for tat, but what about the Colorado Springs kids that I helped?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They came grand total out of pocket, including appraisal.
Everything.
And inspection. They came out of pocket. Inspection was $600. I don't know appraisal. What are they like?
$600.
$1,200.
That's mine. Mine were $1,400. Out of
$1,200. That's out of pocket.
And
period.
Now they own property.
Because same scenario, down payment assistance. It was in the spring, so I got him a house for $267,000, 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
That's fire.
Got down payment assistance. They put $1,000 earnest money at closing. They got a check for $900. So financially, they bought a house for $100. Now, if you bring in the inspection and the appraisal, it was
so you're talking
$1,300.
You're talking
out
about leverage. You're out of pocket $1,200.
It's so funny.
$300,000,
and you got a house.
I love how you said their job titles. I just think back.
Well, because
like,
a lot of people will sit there and go, I can't do that because I don't have this. I'm not a banker.
It just makes me laugh.
Oh, these guys work for the railroad.
You watch HGTV.
Right.
And get like
that scripted crap.
Like, well, yeah, but you watch it. And
I'm a
like,
dog groomer. My husband collects butterflies.
I create shoes for pigeons.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bid out a $1.5 million bungalow
but
in
it's
LA.
But it's real life shit. I think the important part is these guys have been renting forever and they made the decision. Hey, you know what? We want to do something different. They reached out. They partnered with me. I partnered them with my group of people, my inspector, my lender.
Your tool belt.
Contractors. Yeah. I use my tool belt. And out of pocket, they were able to essentially pay $1,500 out of pocket, and they own a piece of property worth $450,000.
What's important to say too is this market we're talking about, like buyers, why recession could be good. If you are a buyer, or if you have buyers in the market right now that are willing to compromise, you will have the best experience in this recession market. Because if you're willing to say, I'll move an extra 10, 15 miles past where I want to go, or I'll get land and just get a smaller, you will capitalize the best in a recession market, in a buyer's market, because you can adapt. You're not locked into, I want 3 beds, 2 baths, and I want my laundry room on the second floor. But if you are willing to move things around and adapt your image of what your home would look like, you will capitalize phenomenally in a buyer's market.
Yep. With a good agent.
Yes, with a good agent.
I want to use this guy over here, Jameson, as a great example. And I do it myself, but I want to use another agent that does it. I've seen this man work a deal till... Damn, I was like, dude, maybe you just leave it alone. And for me to say that, it takes a lot. The dude stayed on track. He got creative.
Yep.
Ended up selling that house. So you need an agent that knows what they're doing and is willing to take on a challenge, because in the long run, he gets more clients and everybody wins.
Yep.
Right. So to illustrate numbers, if we're talking about on a dip on price point, what is a good reduction if a house sits on the market, let's say 40 days plus, percentage wise, not dollar wise, because dollar is subjective. Because if you're selling a $250,000 condo and a $700,000 house, the price reduction is going to be drastically different. Yeah. But a lot of agents use dollar signs. Mm-hmm. We're going to drop your house $10,000. Guess what? That does not work if your house is worth $700,000. Percentage wise, what would you say?
I would tell you so it depends on what average days on market are, right? So let's say average days on market is 45. Okay. That's what it is.
Well, let's just say that we're there. We're there. Like, we need a reduction.
5%.
I would say 5%.
5% is what I do.
Yep. I also think it depends also on two things. One, feedback from the showings, right? Two, the number of showings. Because if you're getting a ton of interest, right? Even though people are seeing it and then they're seeing the property itself versus you could have a house on the market for 45 days with zero showings, then I think that's the market's telling you, okay, that 5% should probably be 10.
This is what I tell myself. You know what I mean? And the third thing is urgency of the seller. Mm-hmm. If the seller needs to sell, okay, we need to jump on that, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if this is a conversation I have with my sellers, going into a market that's a little unknown, we're going to have to play the market. Well, what does that look like? Well, Mr. Seller, if we put it on the market and we're there for 30 days, let's say 2 weekends, and we get zero showings, we're definitely overpriced or something's wrong with the house.
Correct.
So we need to adjust.
Or something's wrong with the market, which is what we saw in October, November of last year.
That's what I'm saying. We're testing the market, right? Yes. So that's what I mean, testing the market. If we have zero in 2 weekends, something's up, either price or condition.
Yep.
If we're on the market for 2 weekends, some showings, all right, let's talk about maybe just the house. Maybe we're priced right because we're bringing in the buyers, but no one's, you know, pulling the trigger. So maybe it's the house. But if you have zero in a month, then you're definitely overpriced and maybe condition. But if I'm talking to the seller on a $700,000 house, 5% isn't $10,000. No. Right. It's $35,000. That's a significant reduction. Mm-hmm. So now going into this, if you're going to do the initial drop at 5% and we're going to see that going across the board on a $700,000 home, do you really lose that much equity? So you're going to lose $35,000, but you're also going to buy less over here and it's all going to change on what you buy. So we're not talking about you're going to lose $150,000 in equity that you gained the last year. So you really didn't lose as a seller because you're going to turn around and buy less and that's going to come back up anyway. But your reduction is not going to be huge unless you're 90 days in. Right. Maybe you're going in another five. So now you're at 70K.
Well, still under the 150. And at that point, if you're at 70K, now the conversation turns to, instead of reducing 70K, can I spend $35,000 and renovate something that is going to get me to where that point is?
So how much is a kitchen renovation? That's the biggest thing. 15, 10 grand.
Right.
Do you rather just spend 15, 10 grand and then keep 35K?
Yep.
Or reduce it 35K. Time is also important. So if they don't have the time to do it,
or if they don't have the funds,
or displaced. Right. I mean, I have a contractor that may be able to remodel your home.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, you could sit there and say, hey, you know what? You have $200,000 in equity. Let's take 2 weeks off the market, apply for the HELOC, pull the HELOC. We'll use that because it's interest free for the first 5 years, right? Like, there's ways that you can do it.
I chuckle because it's when you get realtors talking about this strategy, how can you do it? This will go from 0 to 100 and we will lose 95% of the viewership and the listeners.
Yeah, we're talking about HELOCs, DTIs, and then the LTV, saying, like, and then after remodel value.
There's ways to do it, and it's not a straightforward path. Yes.
And you don't need to know all of this. Right. Don't take notes on this.
Right. Yes.
Get a good realtor. Exactly. So make it happen.
I think this is a great place to move into our One Rock takeaway for today's episode. Yeah. And just to give you guys a recap, on today's episode, we went over what is a recession, how does it affect the housing market, what does it look like as a seller, and what does it look like as a buyer? Honestly, guys, I think this is a necessary conversation that has to be had between every agent and every client for the next year as we get into the spring market that is honestly unpredictable, because this is one of the most unpredictable economic times that we've seen in a good while, because what the current administration is trying to do is a long-term play.
Yep.
And they said it's going to hurt up front, but then long-term it could help. So in all reality, we have to sit, we have to wait, but that doesn't mean that you can't be prepared for whatever the outcome has to be or will be. So on this One Rock takeaway, you guys okay if I take it?
Go for it.
Go for it.
I am having a identity crisis because just this conversation, I feel like I'm turning into a capitalist.
Oh no.
And what I mean by that is, like, truly a recession is good for people who are good with finances.
Agreed.
Like, if you are a buyer that has been planning, if you put a plan in play, you've been paying off debts, you've been getting there, you will benefit. If you are a seller and you have prepared, you have done work to your house, you've updated your kitchen, you've changed your cabinets, you've done your floors, you're in a great position in the overall market, because I would say, I mean, 90% of homeowners don't want to put that money in because they don't expect to sell. But if you've been keeping up with it, you've been doing that upkeep on a buyer or a sale side, a recession could be a good opportunity. And I'm going to leave it with, there's a song by Jackson Browne, and it's called The Pretender. And one of the lines is, I'm going to be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender. And if you go listen to that song, the whole idea behind that song is, came out during the 60s when the ideology of love, free living, all that kind of stuff. And it ends the song in with, I'm going to buy a house by the side of the freeway and be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender. And it basically becomes, everybody wants love, free trade, all easy life, and everybody has everything. But then as you actually start to grow and you see how the world works, how money works, you go, okay, I'm going to become a part of the system and use the system to make it work for me. And that's where I say, I feel like I'm becoming a capitalist, because 5 years ago, I had none of the knowledge that I had now. Mm-hmm. And I would have been like, oh, this recession is going to kill her. What are you talking about? This is where now I'm sitting here and I'm going, oh, this is a really good opportunity. So please, my One Rock takeaway is, don't be scared of the headlines. Reach out to people who specialize in the industry. You can reach out to us, reach out to a family member, real estate agent that you trust, or any realtor that you trust, lender that you trust. Ask them questions, because now could be a phenomenal time for you. It's my One Rock takeaway.
I think you hit it on the nose with education and knowledge. It'll change your mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to leave it with the song too, by the late and great Tupac Shakur. I'm just kidding. If you don't mind, I'll give mine. And it's around what you just said. Don't feed into the scare tactics. The media is going to tell you the what's the term?
They're going to pander.
Well, yeah, they're going to give you the juicy stuff. And what's the juicy stuff? Fear. Mm-hmm. Don't let them scare you. They only know what they know, and they're going to give you the information that makes headlines. They don't know. They don't know your situation. They don't know what's really going to happen. They're just regurgitating, you know, some of the sexy stuff that's going to, you know, get you to watch. In this upcoming recession, when we get there, if we get there, it's going to be a recession. It's not going to be a market crash. Mm-hmm. The elements are not there for a market crash. And when I say crash, you're not going to take a $700,000 house and it's going to be $350,000 next day. You may get a dip, you know, a couple grand, you know, maybe $70,000 at most, 10%. You're still okay. Figure out your situation first, and then go get your education and knowledge and make an educated decision.
I was reminded with this Tupac thing. I sent this to you, I think, on Instagram, where it said, fuck bitches, get money.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
But then it said, so is that insinuating that I refrain from having sex with females in order to get rich, or am I expected to do both equally on the same front just as well? And I think that's a decision a lot of people have to make, right? Yeah. So it goes back to your education.
He was a visionary, you know that Tupac.
He was. He didn't. Shoot. He knew what he was talking about. Shit.
Shoot.
Fuck bitches, get money.
Hail Mary.
I'm gonna pile onto both of what you guys said, but I'm gonna take it just from a different perspective. Human beings are driven by two main stimuli: fear and pleasure, right? And headlines. It's a lot easier to instill fear with a headline than pleasure. So that is what you guys are seeing, is a lot of fear mongering. We talk about it all the time with this recession and everything else. It's why the headlines are coming fast and furious, so on and so forth. From a housing market standpoint, last year, nationwide, about 2.5% of homes in the U.S. changed hands in what we have already seen as the lowest amount of transaction volume since 2008, 2009, right? So if I were to tell you guys, hey, 2.5% of homes changed hands last year, what do you guys think the historical average of percent of homes changing hands is throughout history?
2.9%.
Okay.
I have no clue.
So it's about 3.4. So if you look at it, one headline will say 2.5% of homes changed hands in 2024, which is the lowest in three decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the historical average is only 3.4%. So it's less than a percent swing in one of the highest interest rate and lowest affordability eras that we've ever seen.
Where home prices still increased.
Right. So my point is, yes, the headlines are what the headlines are, but just remember they are psychologically built to instill fear so that you pay attention and click and click and click and click. But in reality, I will say this, and this is what I said, piggyback off both of you guys. Yeah, we can go into a recession. It's not nearly as bad as the mainstream media is going to want you to believe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and they use numbers like 2.5% to, oh my God, that's nothing. Well, out of a million houses, that's still 25,000 houses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's still business going on.
Exactly. So,
no, so and then the difference between the 3 and the 2 and the 2.5 is even less. Mm-hmm. It's only 5,000 homes in a million homes.
Phenomenal conversation. Great. Honestly, like what this conversation in itself did for me, just mentally kind of breaking it down and actually going through the conversation, I look forward to what's going to happen only mm-hmm. from a learning standpoint. I want to see, because again, we say it all the time, this is a perfect storm. We've never seen this before with a housing market. And I'm interested to learn from it. I want to see what happens. So I think this is a great time to move into our bourbon review for today's episode. What are you guys thinking?
I don't know.
I need to get my nose in JC's glove.
I don't know. I mean, as you can see, I still have the majority of me. I got stuff to do today, but I didn't really dive too much into it, but I like it. It's my wheelhouse. And what's crazy, as it opened up, I'm getting hints of raspberry, mm-hmm. like fresh raspberries, not candy raspberries, fresh raspberries.
All right. If you guys haven't seen it yet, the Glencairns that we use have a huge diameter. I would say it's about a four or five inch diameter on these. This has been sitting open.
That's larger
now.
Than average, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this one's been sitting open for 1 hour and 7 minutes. Just get your nose in it. Definitely.
I still have mine.
Well, I'm saying this one hasn't moved.
Oh.
Like we've been swirling and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there, but it opened. The floral notes came through. That to me.
That's a different bourbon than what I have.
Yep.
That's a different nose.
That's what I'm saying. The burn is still there, but it's come down and opened to more of that flavor, more of those tasting notes.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Different bourbon than what I have, too.
It's incredible. I'm gonna take a sip of it. Just wanna. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's a different. It's crazy. It's a different. Yeah, it's a different bourbon.
Wow.
Different bourbon.
Talk about the sweetness of it. Like, we talk about this all the time, but I know I say like, oh, who lets a bourbon open? But like, this is a testament to, if you have a high proof bourbon, pop that cap for a little bit, especially on the neck pour. And before you pour it out for you and your people.
I would also say this is a perfect candidate for like an eyedropper of water.
Yeah.
Even if you don't get the chance to open it up.
Yes.
Pour it and then maybe 2 to 3 drops of water in here and it's a completely different.
Yeah. I mean, it would even hold its own if you don't have a dropper, an ice cube.
Ice cube.
One ice cube.
Yeah. Especially if you did a rock, like a block, like a square cube instead of just a regular one where it goes slow.
And again, the difference between you got your ice cube.
Who does a regular ice cube?
Well, if
what do you mean the
consumer,
the normal people,
the consumer doesn't have
LG makes refrigerators that make
for like $5,000 and I'm still trying them all over. I want $1,500 bucks. I want one, but
$1,500.
I got silicone molds in my freezer.
So do I.
That's what I have.
I got silicone
molds. Saying most people would be like, oh, I got a bourbon. Let me just buy.
So I have.
We could do an episode on ice.
Hey, by the way, just on ice.
Total side note: I have my mom's trained. Yeah, so she'll come over. And I'll ask her, hey, do you want to? And she loves, she said it. She goes, I can't drink anything under 95 proof.
Yeah.
It's a good woman.
Yeah, right? And so she comes over. She came over the other day and I forgot to put my ice molds because I don't drink during the week. Right. Mm-hmm. So I usually just save them for the weekend. And I had.
And the podcast.
And she goes, yeah, I'll take a pour of that. And she goes, she goes, grab me an ice ball. Right. My mold. And I go, oh, shit, I haven't frozen any. I go, do you want regular ice? Just asking. She goes, no, pour it neat.
Yeah.
Like, nice. Proud mom moment.
Yep. Hell shout out.
You know,
she knows. She says, I'm not Booker's, taking fucking ice cubes.
Booker's is one of my favorites.
That's awesome.
And aren't they owned by Jim Beam?
Yes.
Yep.
This reminds me of Booker's a little bit, honestly.
It does. It does. Though, yeah, that more of
a. Booker's a little darker, but.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the mash bill on this guy, because I think after it, honestly, I think the name, the Alchemy, they were 100% mm-hmm. correct using Alchemy, because I think doing that 10% malted rye is what added to that complexity, that opening over time.
I agree.
Is it gave it, it locked it in, but then when it opens, it is, I mean, it almost like candy.
Yeah.
For 112.
Yeah.
Almost like, mm-hmm. but not like that pasty sugar that you get, but good like a good quality caramel chocolate that's like coating your mouth.
Mm-hmm. The malted rye kind of balanced it out and hindered the rye from taking off into full rye mode.
Yeah,
exactly. It didn't just take off rye. It was like it's rye, but then it just kind of held it back and balanced it into a good rounded bourbon.
I would love to see what somebody who primarily drinks rye thinks of this. Only because I think
There someone that primarily drinks rye?
I think so. There's always
people. I mean,
I'm just the reason I say that is because in the ryes are Clint always going to be on a more spicy. They're always going to be a little bit more chewy. So this one introducing those sweet elements, would somebody who loves rye, would they say, like, I would not make this into a Manhattan?
No.
Normal rye, I would make it. This I would not do.
This lends itself towards the smoke wagon rye.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't make this a cocktail in general.
No.
I would just have this too much flavor there. Or on a rye.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Too much flavor there. You don't want to mess with it.
You don't want to mess with it. Because it evolves.
Yes.
So
that's what, and that to me, you always say, complexity and evolution of a bourbon, that is what indicates a good bourbon.
Agreed.
Bring all the high elevated
stuff. It just
allows
you to not have to leave it open for an extended period of time.
Yes.
To get the same benefit.
Yeah. Just do two little droppers.
Yep.
Oscar, we need to get you doing a video of your.
I keep forgetting.
I know. I'll bring it in.
I know. I'll bring it in. Yeah. I mean, we can't smoke in here. Like to do a smoked bourbon.
They could do it for it. They got it.
Just they do it in there? Yeah. We have a patio.
All right.
It's about to be 80 degrees.
Smoke it and keep it, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and give our rock ratings. If you're new to the podcast, if you're just listening, just viewing, the way that we do our rock rating is on a scale of 1 to 10, but it's flipped because normally with a bourbon, the more rocks, the more ice you put in it, the worse that bourbon is. You want to water it down, get rid of that whatever flavor or sour mash is in there. So for
it's like golf.
Yes.
Yeah.
You lower the score, the better.
Chris did it again. I was blown. I'm surprised by it. I definitely think that their plan with this came to fruition. Mm-hmm. What they were trying to do with this bourbon definitely played through. As far as ryes go, again, I sit on that sweeter palate, but this has the burn with the alcohol.
I mean, I don't classify it as a rye, but.
Just because of the bill.
I know.
Just because of the bill.
I'm just saying that malted rye makes a huge difference.
It does. It does. Yeah. But I think because of the complexity of it, because the evolution of it, for me, I think in my palate, this is one of the best rye mash bills that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I want to give it a 1.9 or a 2.
Okay.
What's the price on it?
So price overall on the bottle, normally finding it, let me look it up for you real fast. But I will say, again, testament to the Rouge, is if you come and you sit down at the bar and you want something good and you want to try it out, but you don't want to pay for the whole bottle, this is a 2-ounce pour and you're only going to be paying $32 for the pour. And this is one that it's going to be a little bit more difficult for you to find going to like a standard liquor store. And again, guys, this is when you see a wine and bourbon bistro, please remember the whole point of that, of them having bourbon, having wine, is for you to have an experience that you can't normally have. Yep. Right. And so that's why Chris here with his bottle selections is so valued, because he's going out of the normal zeitgeist and he's looking for bottles like this.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Chris, I would
never.
Yeah, but
Twin Peaks has Blanton's.
Oh, oh boy, Blanton's. Fucking shoot me. So these
Twin
bottles.
Twin Peaks has girls serving.
If you were to buy the bundle, so all three of the Dark Arts, it's $279 is what I'm finding.
Bundle
Rooski. and just quick look, the bottle for this one is anywhere between $85 to $100.
Okay.
So for a pour, you could try it out, you could taste it. I'm telling you guys, you're going to like it. I gave it a 1.9. To a 2, Oscar?
I'm going to change it because the price is absolutely awesome.
Right?
I had it a little bit higher, but at that price point, I'm going to give it a solid 2.
Hell yeah.
It's a beautiful 2.
It's a beautiful 2.
It looks like
I don't have my pen, dude. I know. I don't have my pen.
Fat finger.
I can't. It doesn't work.
What?
I've tried. It doesn't work. I know. Right. I tried. I thought about it. I was even, if you saw me, I was like,
trying to do it.
Damn it. It doesn't work. This is. There's few bourbons that I drink that I tell myself, like, I would never put this in any cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
I would just to enjoy it, I would put it either on a rock with maybe one or two drops. And that's it. The way JC's glass opened up.
Yeah, it blew my mind.
Well, blows my mind.
I mean, I always say I'll make one old fashioned out of any bottle. I probably wouldn't make.
Yeah, there's a couple like Booker, this same book, thing. No, I wouldn't do it.
I have. Yeah, it made a great one. Yeah, but I don't. And this one, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I think I'm gonna go 1.9.
1.9. Yeah. And really, for the price point, for the complexity. Because
I look at it like this. If I go to a place and I'm gonna spend $32 on a pour.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to enjoy that pour?
Mm-hmm.
To me, yes. This 100%.
This is one that you'd get. They'd be like, "Oh, hey, do you want to try this?" Oh, I've never really heard of it before. I don't know how good it's gonna be. No, trust me. Let me pour it out for you. Get a taster of it. You would taste that and be like, I want to experience this. I want to try this.
I kind of have like, you're on a business trip.
Put it this way. I'm gonna buy this bottle today.
Yeah.
So
you're on a business trip. You have an hour to kill.
Right.
You don't really want to drink a whole lot, but you want one solid drink. $30 all day
for all my.
And I also look at it this way because this is just how I operate, right? Like if I go somewhere and you guys know this, obviously viewing probably don't unless you follow me. Like if I come across a good bottle, I take a picture and I send it to you two, and I'm like, y'all gotta try this. Like this is, you gotta do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a bottle I would say, yes, we gotta figure out how to get this.
Yeah. So, and I
think it's fantastic.
For all my,
it was a lot of hype. Yep. And I think the alchemy thing, and like a lot of times we talk about gimmicks.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, that's like a gimmick bourbon type of deal.
My Lord of the Rings fans, my D&D fans, everybody.
Harry Potter.
This is the bottle that you should have on the table.
Yeah.
This is the bottle that you should be drinking.
I'm going to buy this today because I want this on my shelf.
That's well, it. And I don't think they did anything gimmicky. They just hyped it up.
No,
with some,
what I'm saying gimmicky is like.
No, I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And then sometimes they just fall short or they're just like too much.
They have phenomenal.
This
marketing.
One they said, this is what we did. And they came through.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess
yep.
gimmicky, I mean, like if you read the description on the back, it talks about fire and coal and wood and we're going to turn it into a liquid gold. And it's like, do you got to do so much? Like just tone it down. But I think it came through.
Played in. So we got a 1.9, a 1.9, and a solid 2. That is probably the highest rated rye.
Yes.
Rye heavy mash that we've had on the show. So definitely check it out, guys. And also don't forget, come down to the Rouge for the month of March. Until the 14th, they are doing a...
Tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow?
They're only doing it through tomorrow? Today's the 13th.
No, you're right. They are doing it the month. So come down, try the Green Spot, Yellow Spot,
Gold Spot.
It is a flight that they're doing of Irish whiskeys that are triple distilled. So a lot different than American style
and
whiskey.
And pot distilled.
And you can get that entire flight for $58.
Not 420 pot distilled. Don't get fucking excited.
This is Colorado.
It's a whole
but you can get that entire flight for $58. Try it out. Get a taste of some good Irish whiskey and see what the differences are. The bartenders here are phenomenal. They can break it down and tell you the difference between Irish whiskey, Canadian whiskey, American whiskey, whatever it may be.
It's bourbon.
Bourbon. It's a full experience here.
Wine.
So please check them out. Give them a call. Come see one of their events, or just come have a great charcuterie board. With that being said, you can always get in touch with us. Find us on our own social media,
The Colorado Real Estate Guy, or James Namros. If you guys are on Facebook,
Oscar the Realtor CO.
You can find me at Charlie Sardelli across the board. And guys, seriously, just thank you so much for everything that you've been doing for us. All the likes, comments, shares that you've been doing. We did start an Instagram page, so please. Follow that is the Mile High Perspective. You'll find us. We post clips there. We post some information about the market, some things that you can do, home buyers, home sellers. So check that out. Drop us a subscribe. Always, always, always leave us a comment. Let us know if there's a bottle that you want us to try. We'll get in touch with Chris because if you say it's a bottle that's hard to find, I bet you money Chris can find it.
I'm ready to put money on that.
Yeah, 100%.
He's like one of those dogs that are specifically bred to find truffles.
I thought those were pigs.
Or pigs, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, pigs.
Find truffle? Yeah. That he can, yes. He has not handed us a high proof yet. That was like,
sucked. No, it's been.
So come down here, check it out. If you have a bottle,
like Steph
I said.
Curry right now. He's a 50-40-90 guy.
Let us know. But you can always reach all of us 24/7, email resotr@themilehighperspective.com or give us a ring.
720-584-3361.
And guys.
Or DM us, leave a comment, like, share, subscribe. Mm-hmm. Leave us a rating.
Subscribe.
Like if we're doing a good job that giving you guys information, we'd love to hear it. Helps us grow the channel and reach more people.
And if we're not doing a good job, leave
Tell us
a comment.
Right.
Let us know. Yep. Let us know. All right, guys, on that note, we'll catch you later. Thank you so much for another great episode.
Yep.
Cheers.
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 Drink responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. To watch our live video recording, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date with all the events and specials going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.